start hour number three by talking some hockey. We are joined right now by a sports broadcaster representing NBC Sports, a winner of six sports Emmys in the last 8 years alone. He is a member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. He was a second baseman at the 2012 Pittsburgh Pirates Fantasy Camp, Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final, Vegas at Washington, tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern on NBC. Critical game. It's going to be a great game tonight. Doc Emrick is my guest. Doc, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on the program. How are you?
Good, Jim. How about yourself?
Doc, I'm doing great. It is so nice to visit with you, and thanks for making time, especially on a game night. Let me first ask you, what was the atmosphere like in the Capital One Center on Saturday night for Game 3, and in particular when the Caps won their first Stanley Cup game at home?
Like none other. And there have been a lot of others in my lifetime coming in here and doing games in the playoffs, but they've never been this deep before. And there was that air of expectancy that we've seen in the past. But this air of expectancy was paid off with belief, especially in Game 6 of the third round of the conference final when they shut out Tampa Bay. And you sense that there was that hump that they crossed at the halfway point when they finally beat Pittsburgh. But then there was that feeling, maybe we can go into Tampa and get a seventh game. And then there was this feeling of not only relief from beating Pittsburgh, but belief that they could go all the way with this. Well, now they've won two straight. And if they win this one tonight, it's just the mathematics. That would be Vegas having to win three straight and having no margin for error. And there's a very slim chance that that could happen. So this is enormous tonight, but in answer to your question, it was unparalleled with anything I've ever experienced coming into a Capitals game during the playoffs, because they've never been this far. And they've never had this kind of belief in their team before.
That voice belongs to Doc Emrick. He joins us right now. Now, Doc, you've seen some pretty amazing saves over the course of your career. But what was going through your mind when you saw Braden Holtby make the save that he made with 2 minutes left in Game 2?
It does flash back in your memory to others that have changed the course of series. And you don't want to get ahead of yourself because it was Game 2 and say that it's going to turn a series around. But so far, it's been groundbreaking for the Capitals, because they spun off of that, won that game, and then they won the next one. And if they win this one tonight, then we're starting to say, okay, then that's the save that's similar to Frank Pietrangelo's against New Jersey and the one by Tim Thomas of Boston against Steve Downey in the Tampa Bay Conference Final and some others. I think paramount in my mind was the one Marc-Andre Fleury made in the 2009 Game 7 Final with a second and a half to go that won for his team. There was no margin for error there. If he makes the save, they win the Stanley Cup. If he doesn't, it goes to overtime. And then who knows, maybe Detroit being the home team wins and they win the Stanley Cup. So that's the ultimate in my mind.
Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final, Vegas at Washington tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern on NBC. Doc Emrick joins us. Doc, what do you make of the way Alex Ovechkin has shown up in these playoffs and the energy and ferocity that he has brought to the team?
It actually turned, Jim, back in the first round, and you wouldn't have thought that it would, you know, for Alex, regular seasons have been magnificent for him, but this was a regular season that started off differently because he got 9 goals in the first 5 games. And I think that was something that was, okay, that's a good start for him, and that's a tremendous start for him, but there seemed to be something different about his commitment and what he was showing the team this year, blocking shots, doing a lot of things that were somewhat different from the game that he had before. Then he gets into the playoffs. They lose the first 2 games right here in Washington, both in overtime, both to Columbus. And he says after the game, we're coming back here even in the series. And sure enough, they did. And sure enough, they never lost another game in that series to Columbus. They took them out 4 straight and took the series in 6. And then they beat Pittsburgh. And then all of a sudden, all of those demons that have been much talked about are in the past. Even though these numbers may not be the greatest numbers he's ever had in the regular season, the numbers he's got in the playoffs are his best ever. And the achievement that he may very well have will be one of the great legacies of a career that's going to have a lot of great moments in it.
Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final. Once again, Vegas at Washington tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern on NBC. NBC sports broadcaster Doc Emrick joins us. Now, Doc, you've been around the sport a long, long time. Have you ever seen anything quite like what the Vegas Golden Knights have done this season, going from not having a roster to being in the Cup Final in less than 12 months?
No, this has been... You know, Jim, you probably grew up in a town where somebody in your neighborhood was going to start a business. And you heard where they were going to put it and the type of business it was going to be. And you thought to yourself, I don't know if that's going to work. You probably didn't say it to them, but you thought, I'll wait and see if this is going to work out. Well, I think there were a lot of us that thought, I don't know if NHL hockey is going to go in Vegas. But, boy, it went right away. They were smart in that they got a lot of home games early. And they made very wise choices with the draft. I know they had an advantage in the draft that other expansion teams didn't have, but they made good choices with it. And 17 of their expansion choices are currently on the roster. So they made good choices, and they lived with them, and they won with them. And then 100 weeks away from the time they were awarded a license to do business, here they are in the Stanley Cup Final. So that business really worked out well for them because they made a lot of wise decisions and everything came together. No, I have seen a Washington Capitals team in training camp in 1974. They came over to where I was working in Port Huron, Michigan, and played a preseason game against another first-year team, the Kansas City Scouts, scored into their own net with a goalie pulled. I mean, it was emblematic of what they were like that year. And they only won 8 games. One of them was on the road. And because they won that game on the road in Oakland, they celebrated by taking a trash basket and holding it over their heads like it was their Stanley Cup. That's the kind of expansion teams I became used to, not the kind that we've seen with Vegas. It's a wonderful story. It's as good as I've ever seen.
That is something else, Doc. I remember that year. I remember those things. That is really
You're
something.
You're not that old, James.
Oh, I am. I am, Doc. I remember that pretty well. You know, let me ask you something, and we're chuckling right now, and this is something that's not funny at all, and there's no really easy way to segue to this, but over the course of the past year, two of your colleagues and good friends, Eddie Olczyk and Pierre McGuire, both battled cancer. Doc, you are a survivor yourself, and in speaking with them, they have both mentioned on this program what a support you were for them. What's it been like being on that journey with them and now having them back with you in the final?
Well, you burn candles, you say a lot of prayers because I think that helps, and I think it helps me deal with what they're going through because it did when I went through it too. It affects at least one out of every three families, whether you're someone who's afflicted or whether you're one of the families by extension that goes through it too, because not just one person in a family is ill. Everyone is affected by it, and so everyone goes through it. And I think, too, the other thing that happens with those two guys, you form a bond and you form a team and you stay in touch. But it particularly Pierre's case was a very quick surgery, but also a fast recovery. He was walking 3 miles a day within a week. What a horse to do that and then go overseas and work the Olympics. And in Eddie's case, he would take the off week from his every other week treatment and work on the air for Chicago or for us. And so the general public got to see him not only go through his treatments, but to bounce back from it and have the energy to work. And I think the inspiration, not only to us, but to somebody down the road who hasn't had that diagnosis yet, but may get it, is I remember when Eddie Olczyk had this, and he went through the treatments that I'm going to have to go to. And maybe I'm not as young as he is, or maybe I'm not as in good a condition as he is, but he was able to do some things while he was going through it, and maybe I'm going to be able to do that too. And I think that's one of the best things that he brought to all of us by doing what he did and handling it the way he did.
Extremely well said. Doc Emrick, my guest. I appreciate your thoughts on that, Doc. Listen, I know that you're never, ever looking to make it about yourself, but you are commonly referred to as the voice of hockey. What does it mean to you to hear that and to know the relationship and connection that millions of fans have to you?
I don't know. It's kind of awesome to hear somebody say that. If along the way some people enjoy the sport more from having listened to me or some of my colleagues describe it, I think anybody that gets in to watch a game and see it live for the first time, whether it's watching a major league game or a college game or a junior game or a minor league game, that's what really gets you hooked. It's what hooked me the first time on December 10th, 1960 in Fort Wayne, Indiana at the age of 14. And what I wanted to do in the worst way, it was an epiphany night for me. I wanted to be a baseball announcer until I saw that game that night for the first time. Then I wanted to be a hockey announcer and get a chance to share the wonderful sport with others. And if someone comes along and says to me in an airport or in a restaurant, "We like hockey because of you," that there's no greater compliment than that. But the real reason that they like hockey is because of the athletes that we have that play it. They are selfless individuals, as exemplified by the Golden Knights and all that they have done for their community through that very tragic occurrence on October the 1st. There are guys like that in every city, even the minor league cities, that give time to their community in various things and are wonderful citizens. In 45 years, Jim, I think I've met six or seven guys that were, you could probably classify as jerks. In hockey, we just don't have many. I don't know about the other sports because I've never worked in them. But in hockey, we have really good people, and that's what's kept me in it so long. And I think that's why fans like to hang around the glass and hang around the exits to the arenas after the guys have come out to go to their bus, because they're just good people.
You know, Doc, it's so true. And I have covered the other sports, and I have talked of athletes in every other sport. And it's true. It's like any other walk of life. There are good guys, there are bad guys. But in hockey, there are more good guys than arguably any other sport. It's just very different in that regard. Let me finally ask you this, Doc. I grew up in Los Angeles as a big sports fan, and I was lucky, having grown up here and being a Los Angeles native, to listen to and see Chick Hearn and Vin Scully, Dick Amberg, some of the best. But I want to ask you about one other person that I'm so glad that I met, the great Ernie Harwell. And I met him in an appearance that I made in Detroit way back in the day. I know he played a role in your thesis when you were a student at Bowling Green State University. How did that relationship start, and then what kind of an impact did Ernie Harwell have on you?
Well, life-changing, and I think anybody that crossed paths with him felt that way. I was a graduate student at Bowling Green, and one of the requirements for the doctoral degree is you write a dissertation, and it has to be on something that has never been done by another graduate student before. So you had to scour the library and find all of the various things that had been done and pick one that hadn't. Well, one that hadn't was a summation of every a history of play-by-play and color commentators in baseball. There had been books written about announcing, but there had never been a definitive history of Major League Baseball announcing. And so my objective was to go back to the very beginnings of radio in baseball and do something like that as my doctoral dissertation. My five-man committee, all of people with doctorates, approved it as a subject. But I really needed someone who had experienced that, who could advise me. And Ernie Harwell became my non-academic advisor to my dissertation. How did he do that? I wrote him a letter. I was about 40 miles south of Detroit, and I wrote him a letter, and very much like if I'd written to a relative, it took 3 days for it to get there in the mail, and 3 days later, I got a letter back with the Detroit Tigers letterhead on it. And he said, "Sure, why don't you come up to Tiger Stadium and we'll talk about it?" And so I came up and sat in his office, which was a cubicle inside a larger office at Tiger Stadium. And I brought my tape recorder, and we talked not only about the history of baseball announcing, but also about what he did currently and how he went about preparing for games. I had no interest at that point in being a baseball announcer, but I sure wanted to learn about what the life of a broadcaster was like. And Ernie Harwell not only gave me that kind of time, but I followed him down the hallway as we went to the press room. And in the hallway was a woman who had a whole bunch of hot dogs on a grill. She was getting ready to prepare for the opening of the stadium for a game that night. And just beyond her was a guy who was standing at his podium getting scorecards and pencils ready to sell. And both of them were looking in our direction, the only two of us in the hallway walking toward them. And I could tell both of them were hoping that he would come over and say hello. And sure enough, he did. And in both cases, he introduced me to them by name, and he knew their names. And that showed me a lot, and it taught me a lot about what this man represented to not only his faith, but how he got along with people. And I've tried to replicate that, but I'm a poor substitute. I learned an awful lot just by being around that guy.
What a great story, Doc. Doc Emmerich joining us, NBC Sports broadcaster, a member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, and of course, a critical game for the Stanley Cup Final. Vegas at Washington tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern on NBC. Doc, what a pleasure that was. What a thrill to have you on the program. Thank you so much. I know it's a busy day and you have preparation to do for tonight's game, but just great, great, great conversation. Great to have you on the show, Doc. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. It's just fun getting in free, and I know you find it that way, too. It's amazing. We pinch ourselves and realize we're around sports.
My friend, preach. You're exactly right. It is fun to get in for free. Doc Emmerich, what a great, great conversation that was. In fact, free is me, and there is nothing better than getting in for free. And, well, the only thing better is getting paid to do it. And that's what Doc's talking about. He had a passion for hockey for a long, long time, and for many years, he's been getting in for free. And already, I'm getting great reaction to that. Romy, thank you for having... I mean, I'm reading an email before the interview's even over.